From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, September 13th, and I'm your host, Andy Klein. Gunashish, thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, the Wearable Art Extravaganza is coming up. It's next weekend, and it's got an amazing theme this year that is sure to be a colorful explosion of fashion and art. And then we're going to be hearing about a special skating experience that has an aim to be part of eliminating cancer. And finally today, we'll be talking to Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's featured speaker for a lecture coming up on Tuesday that's called Eagle's Journey with Raven, and that's by Seattle-based artist Preston Singletary. We'll be talking to Preston today. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. And in the weather, a break in the weather is scheduled for tomorrow, then back to the rain that's been the mainstay of our September so far this year.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-thru locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha anikak gunshish.
As we begin today's show, KTO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Kliné Di have stewarded this land for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the Tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these Tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
They never seem to change as the evening sky grows black and by the grace of God it rains.
Well, there's a little preview of some Buddy Tabor writing on stone. That's part of the project of re-releasing and remastering those CDs of Buddy Tabor's, and really great to hear that. Well, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host today, Andy Klein, and with me now, joining me from the extravaganza that is underway, fully underway across the street. It's Wearable Arts folks. So Margot Ljungberg, do I have that right? Ljungberg. I'm sorry about that, Margot. And Phil Hibshin is here, and Kathleen Harper is also here. Completely and utterly underwater right now dealing with wearable art. Am I right?
We're above water. We're thriving.
You're above
water. We're loving it. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, fully immersed, but not immersed. Drowning.
I'm not saying you're very graceful underwater. I'm not saying that.
We're doggy paddling. Let's say that.
Well, it's so good to guys to, for you to take your time, you know, out of your busy schedule, getting into technical rehearsals next week, then dress rehearsals, then the show's happening all next weekend. And that's one thing that we want to talk about first and foremost with wearable art, before we even get to the theme, sneak previews, all that stuff. It's happening next weekend. It's not in February. It's in September.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I know is throwing a lot of people for a loop, but just wanting to remind people that it has changed, but we are coming. There are tickets still available. It's going to be an amazing show. Mm-hmm. So I know in years past, people have been like, oh, I don't even want to try and buy Saturday tickets because it's probably already sold out. But it's not, because everybody's confused and still thinks it's February.
Yeah. So. We still have tickets. There's really no bad seats in the house. Mm-hmm. Feel free to call the Jack to reserve those tickets. Our number is 907-586-2787, or you can visit our website, jhc.org, and there's a big button right on the front page that says Wearable Art Tickets.
Very
Just
cool.
Click it and we can get you set up.
And Margo, you're the director.
Yes.
Have you directed before?
Yes.
Okay.
This is my
seventh
production.
All right. Very good. So this is Neon Apocalypse is the theme this year. That, to me, that's a good one.
It is a good one.
It's a really cool
Because
one.
That's just like you can kind of go in lots of different directions, but you know that it's going to be excitement and brightness and fun and those kinds of things associated with it. Is that what you're seeing in the
creation
so far? Yeah.
We are kind of, the show in general is the final hours, the final moments leading up to that cataclysmic event of the apocalypse. But the apocalypse has begun elsewhere, and many of the artists are already in a post-apocalyptic moment when their piece walks the runway. And I'm really excited. We have 21 pieces participating in the show, which does not mean that we have 21 artists, because some pieces require more than one artist, and we have lots of models. And we have a lot of returning veterans like Nick Dehart, Amy Dressel, Michelle Morris, Jessica Hood, some of these like tried
all
and
stars,
true fan favorites.
All stars.
Absolutely. We also have some new artists. I'm thinking Tess Seltzer. Mm-hmm. We have some student artists and student models who will be
participating. And that's some of the most creative and fun stuff comes from the student model. Kathleen, the classic stage director, has got her walkie-talkie going. She's got the two-way radio on at all times. It's great. I was going to say that I remember so much from past wearable art. The student section is so cool because it's like, it's sort of like you see there's just no limits to the imagination, right? They're not trying to fit into some specific style or that kind of thing. It's just kind of a free-for-all, fun, the imagination of younger people is super fun to see.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, wearable art has always been a community event. So we have people who have lots of fashion design or artistic experience in building this stuff. But then we have also people who are trying it for the first time. And they all get an equal footing on the stage and the same amazing lighting and the same amazing set to perform in front of. And I think that's really exciting to see how our community comes together and expresses their artistic side.
Well, I mean, speaking of amazing set and amazing area to be in, the new Centennial Hall, right? Now that's pretty exciting, right? The new space has got to be a really cool thing. Now, are you going to take advantage of all the AV and all that stuff a lot of it?
We are in that now that we have all these more screens in the space. The set is going to be utilizing some of those screens to kind of have like an element to add into the space. And then we'll, of course, still have big giant screens with live video feed of what's happening on the stage, so that even if you're on like the far side of the runway, you can still have a pretty good view of what's happening over there with it blown up to like larger than life.
And just a different view too, just like being on any big sporting event or something, you can always look at the Jumbotron, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We got all the Jumbotrons and then we got all like extra scenic stuff. It's fun. Yeah.
And I would say that the advantage to getting to utilize these new screens and projectors that Centennial Hall has, that's a hard word to say, you guys, is that the scene can change during the show, which is very helpful for this theme as we're getting closer to the apocalypse. There will be some changes.
Does that mean that there's a lot of pre-production you're having to do for this? I mean, as far as video and that kind of thing, is that right?
There is a lot of pre-planning.
Without giving away anything, obviously. Right.
We're not getting too complicated with things.
Okay,
but,
okay.
Trying to make it dynamic, but not overly produced
at the same time,
if that makes sense.
Tell me about choreography. How does that work for every artist? Are they just responsible for their own choreography, or do you have kind of a guiding force there?
That's a great question. So I kind of touch base with all of the models and say, what is your background? What is your experience? And is that something that you're going to come in with a strong idea and just need me to come in and do some final touches or zhuzhing to what you've presented? Or are you someone who's like, this is not what I normally do. Please help me. Please help. And we have that whole range that shows
neon
up.
Spectrum.
Yes, we do. And so then they all have a rehearsal with me. They get to spend some time with me, and we make sure that they're pacing on the runway, because it is a 75-foot runway, which is much bigger than most people's living rooms. So they need help spreading out their choreography and getting it, where it's paced in a way that makes sense. And then they also work with two model coaches who I've had the pleasure of having for many years, Melissa Patterson and Donnie Gott. And both of those ladies are exceptional with children, professional dancers, actors. They can do it all, and they really help kind of finalize and bring everyone's choreography to life. So it's a whole different depending on who it is, whether yeah. they get a lot of sure. choreography help yeah. or just some kind of director's vision on
some
it.
Some people come in and they have, it's all mapped out, yes. right? They've yeah. got the exact thing, the exact song, they want all that stuff, yeah. right?
And yeah, yeah. And you have to remind people the audience is on both sides, right? It's not a proscenium, so you can't just face forward and kind of do your thing. You need to cheat to both sides of the audience, which
is there sort of a time consideration? Each artist gets a minute and a half or something like that?
Two minutes? Okay, and yeah. 7 seconds.
2 minutes and 7 seconds.
That's right.
Yep. Very specific.
Got it. Yeah. I was a little looser when I was directing. Whatever. You guys got... No. So, okay. Well, that's great. Well, we'll talk more about the show here in a second, but we also want to talk about, this is, of course, a fundraiser for the yeah. Juno Arts uh-huh. and Humanities Council. Yes. And one of the elements of the fundraiser is always traditionally a really fun part of this, which is the auction, the silent auction that's out there. So
yes.
let's talk about the yeah. silent auction. Phil, we'll talk to you about that.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So like you said, it's actually the Jack's biggest fundraiser of the year now, of the every other year.
yes.
Because we're alternating this event with Auk Rock, which will be next year. But yeah, all the proceeds go to our youth scholarships and education program. So it's a really cool cause. And as a part of the fundraising, and in addition to just regular ticket sales, we have a silent auction. I'm not going to go through every single
highlights,
item,
though.
But
let's hear
highlights.
Some highlights. Yeah,
we have a Bill C. Ray original painting, which is really, really cool,
wow.
and a really big one too.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
We have a really nice handmade George Gress guitar. It's beautiful. One that I'm really excited about.
These are big items.
They're big items.
Like,
there's some really
amazing.
Cool stuff.
Those are two yeah. incredible things. Wow. Yeah.
We have a private ceramics class at the Pottery Jungle that is really, really cool, too. It's a really beautiful studio that just opened up relatively
it's an amazing,
recently.
Amazing yeah. space that she has there.
Oh, yeah.
That's such a cool thing. Does that mean that, like, you could go in as a novice and come out with a pot?
That's what I did.
Did you?
yeah. I signed up for a membership there, and it's been great.
Oh,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So there's just some really cool stuff. We have a beautiful handmade drum by Abel Ryan, a weaving by Sydney Akagi, a print by Crystal Ward. Like, just wow. a lot of stuff going on. So,
it's so
come
cool
for the show.
Yeah.
It's also come for the silent auction.
I love that the things that you accentuated there are all about art and creating art and having beautiful art and music and
yeah.
all that. That's really cool and so in keeping with what wearable art supports and is all about.
We also have a bunch of really cool excursions and restaurant experiences, and we're still accepting donations for the silent auction. So if anyone listening has any artwork or anything they think would be really cool, please reach out to us. Or if you have a business that you want to highlight and help support the arts with, let us know.
Yeah, that's really cool. Tell me one more time, that specifically goes to which part of?
Our youth scholarships and education programs.
Okay. Okay, and then what kind of stuff is that?
So each year we provide scholarships directly to youth wanting to involve themselves in the arts, and that's Jack-funded largely, and it's just a really great program.
And
that
pretty
we,
open-ended?
Pretty
yeah.
open-ended, yeah.
Oh, yeah
the
great.
Goal of that is really to just allow young people to explore art in the way they want to.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
Yeah.
That's really awesome. Well, let's get back to the show now. So the show, let's just talk about nuts and bolts of the show. It's Saturday and Sunday, right?
yep,
so what
yep.
time and all that kind of stuff?
8 p.m. on Saturday evening, and it'll be at 3 p.m. on Sunday afternoon.
Okay, and then tickets are still available, as you said. And mm-hmm. the tickets, there's kind of a range, right?
There is a range,
so
yeah.
tell me about, like, you know,
so,
nosebleeds.
Saturday night's the more expensive night, and Sunday afternoon is the more budget night.
It's a matinee pricing.
It is matinee pricing, mm-hmm. exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But there's tables that are right up against the runway, and of course those are the primo seats, so they're going to be more expensive.
There's like $150 on Saturday. Those really primo seats, it goes from $30 to $150 or so on Saturday.
Yeah.
I think,
yes.
right?
Yeah. yeah. And
so then
like,
kind of peaks out at $100 on Sunday.
Yeah.
But those
yeah.
are the
yeah.
runway side table seats.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where you're just like, you're right there. You are like, you could reach out and touch the artist. We don't recommend
but
that,
don't recommend.
But you could.
You can high five an MC. If
yeah.
Want.
Yeah. Yes.
And then aisle seats are a little bit more expensive because you've got that extra leg room. We're kind of like the airlines, I guess. And then if you're like squished into the middle, then those are our kind of like cheaper seats.
And do you have MCs this year?
We yes. do.
Who
we
are your MCs? Tell
one
me.
MC
one
this
MC
this year.
Okay.
I've changed it up.
Very
We're
good.
Going with the amazing Kelsey Riker.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
You don't need anyone else.
No, I do not.
If you got Kelsey there, Kelsey's going to handle it. That's great.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's fantastic. So you know you'll be entertained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe even a little soft shoe. You know what I'm saying? Could be. I don't know.
I will say
Kelsey might break that out. I don't know.
We'll have a little soft shoe. And it won't be Kelsey.
Okay.
So you will see some models give you a little soft
shoe. Oh, very good.
And I think it's one of the funniest pieces we have in the whole bit.
Yeah. It is pretty fun.
Yeah.
It is going to be great.
Is there any kind of preview you can give me on some of the individual amazing anything?
Like what, the artist bits and stuff?
Artist,
like that?
Yeah, the artist, the pieces, either the bits or the pieces
well,
of art, things to watch for,
I
things
am
to make sure we see.
Artist this year, so I guess I can spoil my own piece.
Yes. Don't do it.
Because I don't want to spoil anybody else's
okay.
piece without their permission,
yes.
if that makes sense.
So. I mean, you could say, you could tell me, you know, watch for a dragon, for instance. I'm not saying there is a dragon.
There will be robots.
There will be robots.
There will be robots.
There will be robots.
I will
One
say...
of whom is my husband, and that's going to be.
This is. Isn't necessarily a spoiler.
Bo is rather robotic. I mean, let's
yeah.
face it.
I was just really surprised to see all the different directions the artist took
yeah,
the theme in.
Yeah.
Because, like, when I heard Neon Apocalypse, I was like, oh, 80, like
right,
80s end of the
wham.
World movie.
Yeah, right.
Cyberpunk.
And some are kind of within that scope,
yeah.
but then just others went like,
we got, like
totally
full
yeah.
on into like post apocalyptic.
Yeah.
And then we've got people who are like, forget about the apocalypse part. I'm just focusing on Neon.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, so there's a really wide range,
and then other
and of
folks
course,
that are just
we
like
do not
whatever.
Require people to follow.
I was
going to
mention that
so
as well.
So if someone
yeah.
says, you know, I really want to do a piece about mermaids
sure.
in pastels, we're not going to say, I'm so sorry, you cannot.
You could you neon it up a little?
Yeah, can I?
You might
on,
we'll put a black light on
anywhere?
That. Yeah. I mean, black lights are going to be involved.
Yes.
A little
come
bit,
on.
Yes.
Yeah. Black lights are going to be involved.
Right. We have sensitivity
tasteful,
to neon or black light.
Yes. Of black light in areas.
Yeah.
And then I just think the other thing, too, for people to know about having done this before is I don't know what's available, but if people can buy a table, just do it. It's
oh, yeah.
so fun.
It's so
yeah.
fun.
It's the
yeah.
funnest thing in the world is just to get a table and then invite your friends. Or pitch in together, or whatever you do, and then you're like you're all sharing the experience together and having a blast. I mean, that's the thing that's so fun about wearable art is mm-hmm. it just becomes this. It becomes 50 little mini parties.
It does,
you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
And for ticketing wise, on Saturday, some of the tables we still have available are right up at the front of the runway, so they're really good seats. Claim them while you still can.
Yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
awesome.
Yeah.
yeah, super fun. Mm-hmm. Anything else we need to cover? We talked about silent auction. Volunteers still needed?
Yes.
Or, oh, okay.
And I think the volunteer list is on the website?
I believe it is, yeah.
yeah.
If,
so I think
if
it's on the website. And so, folks, we're looking for still, like, you know, ushers and program people mm-hmm. and
ticket scanners.
Ticket mm-hmm. scanners and bag checkers and all that good stuff. So, and it's just a sign up on the form
okay.
on the website kind of deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then we will reach out to you.
Great.
You
know? And then tickets are available at jhc.org, right?
Yeah. Correct.
And
yeah.
as you say, they're in this variety of ranges,
mm-hmm.
including tables and
yeah.
all that. So lots of different ways that you can do it. I'm telling you, get together with four or five friends and get a table and have a blast.
Yeah.
It's the best. It's the most fun. And I mean, I would say Saturday. You know, but, you know, if you got to make it Sunday, but Saturday is just
like
pretty
if you
fun.
Want the party vibe,
yeah, that's
Saturday.
Right. Yeah.
You want to be a little bit more staid.
Or you
right.
like
Sunday,
mimosas.
Or you like mimosas.
Yeah, that's true. Need a little,
you know, little
and
boozy
who
brunch.
Doesn't love mimosas?
I don't know. I haven't met that person.
Only. And very post-apocalyptic.
Yes,
yeah.
right. Mimosas and neon. Yes. Well, all right, you guys. Obviously, this is going to be a fun time. It's happening next weekend. It's Neon Apocalypse, wearable art this year. And all happening over at Centennial Hall. It's happening Saturday night at 8 and then Sunday at 3. And tickets are still available for both shows and
mm-hmm.
available even for courtside seats. Amazing. The VIP seats, there's still a few of those available. So go check it out on jahc.org. Margot, Phil, and Kathleen, thanks so much for coming in. I know you guys are going to have a great time and a nice, fun time. So I'm going to don't even have to wish you that. Just going to say
it is going to be great.
Have yes. a great time. It's going to be awesome. Let's hear a little bit more of Buddy Tabor here. Thanks to all of you for coming in.
Thank you, Andy.
Like plate stained glass,
Life's illusions that love will always last come together, then they fall apart. Pain is hard, but strong is the heart. Now there have been songs of joy and sorrow, songs of loneliness. Forlorn and forsaken, aching for love's sweet kiss. In the mansions of wealth, men seek wisdom and mercy. Stand in the void, and it leaves them so thirsty. Trade the riches of your house for that bliss. Scorned and eluded and betrayed by a kiss. Now there have been songs of joy and sorrow, songs of loneliness. Forlorn and forsaken, aching for love's sweet kiss. Without love, we would wither and die. Abandoned children on the roadside, we would cry. Thirsty in a barren land of drought. Sometimes children love's got its doubts. Now, there have been songs of joy and sorrow, songs of loneliness. Forlorn and forsaken, aching for love's sweet kiss.
A little bit more of Buddy Tabor there from the Writing on Stone re-release. Just came out, a remastered re-release of Buddy Stone's albums as part of that project. Well, coming up next here on Juno Afternoon, community-supported KTOO. Joining me now is Julie Hamilton from Cancer Connection. And Julie, you guys are putting together the Skate to Eliminate Cancer this weekend. It's happening, kind of a two-part, couple of different events happening, right?
Right. There's three events happening.
Oh, three events. Okay, great.
Right.
Gives us more to talk about. Terrific.
Starting tomorrow.
Yeah, yes. Well, one of them is a skate. Let's talk about the skate first. I know that there's also a walk of remembrance as well, but let's talk about the skate, because that sounds like a fun thing to talk about. Get out of the weather a little bit, right?
Right, yeah. Right. There are two skate events. So this is all happening at Treadwell Arena. And the two skate events, one is a youth co-ed three-on-three hockey tournament. And so registration has closed for that, but I imagine if somebody really wanted a young person to go in and skate, they could talk to the people that are at the arena. So that is that three-on-three hockey tournament starts tomorrow at 12:30.
Do you know how many teams are competing?
I think there are about six teams already set up.
Cool.
Yeah.
So it's like a round robin tournament or something?
Right.
Are they, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of quick games?
Well, no, they're a little bit shorter than a normal game, but they're just three people on each team, so that's fun.
A lot of ice to cover.
It's a lot of skating, yes, yes. At one point in my life, I did a three-on-three tournament. It's a lot of work.
Well, I never have, but regular hockey with the regular team, it seems like it gets exhausting, right?
Yes,
but
it's a good workout for sure.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and that finishes up on Sunday, so it starts Sunday morning at 9:15 and finishes at 12:45.
Okay, cool.
So that's a youth co-ed hockey tournament. And then there is also an open skate on Sunday, the 15th, and that starts at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
And that's a $10 registration, but the $10 goes straight to Skate to Eliminate, goes to the fundraiser. Part of it goes to Cancer Connection.
And then I made you go backwards there, because we talked about the Sunday events first, but then tomorrow, because of the break in the weather, of course, that's when you're doing the walk of Remembrance, the Remembrance Walk, and tell me a little bit about that.
Right. The Remembrance Walk is something that I'll be heading up, and we start at Treadwell Arena at noon, and we will walk up. Last year we walked down Front Street, down to the end of Front Street in Douglas, but there's so much construction there right now. What we'll do this year is we'll walk from Treadwell Arena around the backside of Sandy Beach and then out towards the totem pole that's at Sandy Beach, and we'll be carrying flowers. Everybody will get a flower, and we'll put hearts on with pins that, you know, people were remembering. I'll have my mom's name on mine because she passed away at the age of 55 from breast cancer. And so we will it's maybe half a mile. It's a very short walk, but we'll go ahead and throw our flowers in the ocean down there by Sandy Beach. And that is, at noon. And we're asking for a $20 donation for that.
Is that an annual event? Is this something you've done?
This is our second annual.
Second. Okay.
Through the Scott Karas Foundation putting on all of this skating. And Scott Hamilton did come last year and skated with his group. He's not coming this year. It's a little bit scaled down this year because of all the different things going on. There's changes happening all over the place. So we just are doing this a little bit smaller than last year, but it is the second annual.
Yeah.
And we did order the sunshine. So
yes, that's good. I was going to say, that was good. Good planning there.
Yeah.
Smart to think ahead on that and get the sunny day.
And then it will rain until it snows.
That's right. Well, we're kind of resigned to that. It's true. Well, tell me, this Remembrance Walk, I can imagine that this is something that is an emotional experience for people to have.
Yeah.
But also I can also imagine that it's a really warming experience because you're with a lot of people who've had this shared thing happen.
Unfortunately, cancer touches so many people.
I mean, I don't know anyone that hasn't. Family
affected.
That it hasn't touched.
Right.
Yeah,
right. So true. And we do a event at the in the beginning of June every year that's across the nation. Is it's National Cancer Survivors Day. And so it's celebrating survivorship, but also a little bit of memory of those we've lost. But this one is specifically for, you know, people we've lost. So it is a somber event, but it's nice. It's nice to get outside and walk with other people who have been through these things. I'm a cancer survivor. I, you know, do both events. I'm on the board. I believe in supporting, you know, those who are dealing with cancer, who have, you know, like we said, everybody's been touched, unfortunately, by cancer. And one great thing about Scott Cares, that foundation is doing some great research right now for research for, you know, treating cancer. There's one thing they say that's really great. It's something about, you know, treating the cancer and preserving the person. So, you know, not as
right.
harsh treatments for cancer.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're doing some really great research. So the funds from this fundraiser go in part to the Scott Karas Foundation and in part to Cancer Connection. And our piece of it goes to our travel fund, which helps people dealing with cancer who have to travel for cancer treatment. We can reimburse them for some of their travel costs.
Such a key part of this is that. And the travel in this part of the world is such a big part of the budget for getting medical treatment. So really important thing to keep in mind, and an important part of why you're doing these events is to kind of make sure that people can have a little bit of assistance on affording the care they need.
Right, yeah. Right. Because I was in the office the other day and someone came in for some support, and he said, if the disease doesn't kill you, the medical bills will. You know, it's unfortunate, but we do, you know, help a little bit with that.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, and again, while it's a walk of remembrance and there's a somberness to it, it doesn't have to be all that, right? It's a remembrance of people's lives who were important part of everyone's lives that is there. And so that's important to remember them with joy as well.
Right, to remember how they touched our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, it's the Remembrance Walk. That's tomorrow. That starts at noon. This is all taking place over at Sandy Beach and at the Are you meeting at the Treadwell Arena for the Remembrance Walk?
Yes, right in that entrance area for Treadwell Arena, the skating rink. And if people haven't registered, they can still register online for that or the open skate, or they can just show up and, you know, do a donation or, you know, do the suggested registration of $20.
Right. Yeah. And then the skating events happen on Sunday. And that's, let's go through those one more time.
Okay. Well, the youth co-ed hockey starts on Saturday at 12:30. We'll just be finishing up our walks. So it's great to see all the little ones with their huge hockey bags going in.
They still have a lot of energy because it's the first game.
Right. Right. They've had breakfast.
Yes.
So youth co-ed hockey is going to be Saturday, 12:30 to 6, and Sunday, 9:15 to 12:45. They're just playing through the whole tournament schedule. And then the open skate is Sunday at 1 o'clock.
Okay. And then the remembrance walk is, we said that at Saturday
noon.
And the open skate is Sunday. And then, as you said, the kind of wrap up to the remembrance walk and go in and check out kids playing 3-on-3 hockey tournament. Always awesome to see kids playing hockey. It's super fun to watch.
Yeah.
Well, Julie, thanks so much for telling us about this. Julie Hamilton from Cancer Connection. Again, it's the Skate to Eliminate Cancer and also the remembrance walk. It's all happening this weekend at the Treadwell Arena and at Sandy Beach. And I'm so glad, as you said, that you ordered up the sunny weather for tomorrow. Congratulations on that, and and have a great event.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay.
Thanks.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K here at KTOO in Juno. I'm your host, Andy Klein. And coming up next, we're being joined by the next lecturer from the Sealaska Heritage Institute's series of fall lectures, and it's Preston Singletary joining us from Seattle. Preston, thanks so much for joining us via Zoom.
Hello there. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your incredibly busy schedule, doing a little bit of research on you today, and just finding out just a world of different things that you've been involved with in your career. You know, you're first and foremost known as a glass artist and someone who's incorporated Tlingit traditional forms to glass. Tell me just a little bit about that journey. I know that according to your website, you started back in about 82 studying glass and then kind of worked your way into your own cultural influences into that art form.
You're right. I started in 1982 in a factory production studio making pretty rote basic objects, Christmas balls and paperweights and things. Then I started to go to the Pilchuck Glass School, which is an international glass school located north of Seattle. And then there I was exposed to pretty much an international group of artists from all everywhere. It changes throughout the entire summer. You know, each session is different, teaching different disciplines, but that's where I kind of found myself as an artist in about 1988. I started to dabble in Tlingit designs, which is part of my cultural background. My great grandmother comes from Sitka, so she moved down to Seattle in the 20s with all of the family. She was widowed. She came from the box house in Sitka. I'm still connected through this matrilineal connection.
So interesting, but that through that act of meeting with all these different people that were coming from all over the world, you were influenced to look to your own self in a way instead of being influenced. Right. You know, it's just that you kind of went in the direction of introspection.
Yeah, that's right. And so when I started to dabble in the, you know, Tlingit design, form line design, I didn't really know what I was doing. I was copying things out of books. I was trying to, you know, understand the design system. And so from there, you know, I started to work with other people, teachers who could help me understand how to create the design work. And then, of course, it opened up this whole other realm of understanding the history and the mythologies and the, you know, everything and how, you know, issues of, you know, or the protocols of intellectual property and all of these things. So, which is a big thing in Tlingit culture. So I, you know, when I started to work with the designs, I think people recognized there was something more personal going on. And so therefore, I had a successful show and I just kind of built on that. That wasn't actually until about the late 90s, about 97 or 98, when I had my first show of Tlinkit-style glass.
That's really fascinating that that you feel that once you really connected to something that was intimately personal to you, that's when the art really started speaking to a broader audience.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you know, I got a lot of attention for what I was doing quite prematurely. You know, I wasn't really fully developed as a designer of, you know, Tlinkit style. I really had to apply myself, like I said, and get input to what I was doing. So, you know, I realized too that I had this opportunity to share my culture with a broader audience and kind of navigate into the, you know, the modern art world. So that's what I've been able to do, you know, with the sort of a broad audience between Native American art collectors, people who have a fascination of, you know, Alaska Native art, glass collectors, contemporary art collectors, that whole sort of, all of those worlds kind of convene, you know, where my work is. And so that's how it really worked.
Yeah. I wonder whether, you know, your glasswork is such a permanent art form. Do you have occasion to see works you did early on and kind of go, oh, you know, if what was I think? Or is it more like you forgive yourself? I was young. I forgive myself. I didn't know what I know now.
Yeah. You know, it's like Nathan Jackson always likes to say, you know, we all have a humble beginning.
Right.
I certainly had a humble beginning. I tried to surround myself with elders and teachers who could really show me the correct way and tell me good information. I have, you know, like people like Clarissa Rizal and, you know, Walter Porter, Joe David from, you know, from the Northwest here, he's from the West Coast of Vancouver Island, but he was very close connection with Joe David. In fact, they're contemporaries on, you know, in the same, you know, kind of, level, but Joe never really, sought to get popular with his work. You know, the work that he did was for his, community. And he studied at a time when a lot of Northwest Coast, it was sort of, it crossed over. You know, he was new channel from the West Coast of Vancouver Island, but he understood the Northern style of design system. And, you know, and at the time in this, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, for sure, people were learning this. And so he's one of the real masters, Joe David.
But was anyone else doing that style of work in glass?
Well, there's a couple. There is Marvin Oliver, who just passed away. He, you know, he was a professor at the University of Washington. Susan Point also is a Salish artist from the Vancouver area, as well as a couple. There was Larry Avakana, who is actually in Inupiat, you know, from the far north. And so I met him at the Pilchuck Glass School the very first year I went there. In fact, I met two Native American people. Then at that time, there was maybe five.
Yeah.
I met two of them. And it was Tony Hohola from the Southwest. And so the two of them, you know, just imagine my good fortune of just showing up to Pilchuck in 1984, the very first time I ever went there. International artists said, but there was two Native American artists there. And so I bonded with them, and they also encouraged me and supported me over the years.
Yeah. Wow. What a fascinating journey. Well, tell me a little bit about, speaking of journeys, tell me a little bit about this lecture, Eagle's Journey with Raven.
Yeah. So I'm an eagle. So, you know, just sort of, reaching across and being, reciprocal. You know, I do a lot of Raven material. I did Raven in the Box of Daylight, it's an exhibition that is, it's a museum exhibit that's been traveling for the last 5 years, and it just finished its run, but it's going to continue. It's been picked up by several other museums, and it's going to continue its run for another three. And so basically, I'm just going to be talking about you know, kind of the evolution. And I hope that it's something that, you know, people will understand what I'm trying to get at. I'm outlaying a lot of influences and confluences of experience. And so I'm trying to be chronological. And not to say I've been here and there and there and here, but the fact is that all of these things added to my experience. And so I try to synthesize that into my experience as a Tlingit person, you know, and I think by, you know, looking more broadly throughout the world, I think it's given me a different viewpoint, because I did grow up in Seattle. I didn't grow up in Alaska. But I've had teachers that have impressed a lot of things upon me that, you know, once you become a keeper of cultural knowledge, it becomes a responsibility. So that's how I tried to take it. And that's what I'm going to try to illustrate. And, you know, just as somebody who might be listening to the lecture, I hope they'll find it interesting or inspiring.
Yeah.
You know, what does it take to become an artist? Well, I didn't go to art school. And I put my nose to the grindstone through, you know, glass blowing and then immersing myself in the Tlingit culture, you know, and I might mention today, you know, I'm on the board of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. So I feel like by being on the board, I'm able to share those broad perspectives that I was talking about and hopefully, you know, get some cross-fertilization going, you know, borrow from examples of other, you know, situations and gatherings and other Native people that I've been around and bring that experience and that knowledge to, you know, how we work at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute.
You know, as someone who's been working as an artist for 40 plus years now and also is on the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, what's your take or what's your perspective on the place that we're at right now in the development of Native American art and artwork and what's happening with it right now? It's a big question, I know, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a long story, or it's a long answer. I mean, I started showing my work in the Southwest. I started getting, the curators and the museum directors looking at my work, and then the collectors, of course, started getting into these group shows. So
that's interesting that you say that in a way that you had at that time, the place that you had to go was the Southwest. The Southwest had developed a Native American tradition of artwork, but the Pacific Northwest was not a place that you could really go at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't, you know, it really goes hand in hand with, you know, there's a big contemporary Native art market down there. It's been in existence for over 100 years. Every summer, people come together for this. It's called Southwest Indian Art Market. And, you know, I don't show in the market, but I show in galleries, you know, in Santa Fe, and they all benefit from all this big influx of people coming in. So that's where really the market started for me. That's where I got into collections of very significant collectors, you know, from New York to California, all around. And, you know, the thing is that the market is so developed down there, and I entrusted my career to a gallery down there, and they really promoted me and supported me as an artist. You know, all year round, they would include me in group shows, and we would, you know, do pop-ups all around the country. So exposing this, it's an education mm-hmm. that needs to happen around Native art, especially around Alaskan Native art.
Yeah. I kind of interrupted your answer, but so that's where you kind of started. That's against the world capital in a way. Santa Fe is sort of the world capital of contemporary Native American art. But now we're proliferating out, and you can see great Pacific Northwest art in the Pacific Northwest, and Sea Alaska Heritage Institute is leading that happening in Juneau. And so tell me what your perspective is on that development.
Well, so part of why I joined up when I was asked to join Sea Alaska Heritage, it was because of this expansion that's been going on. with all the classrooms and the classes, and they do a really great job of offering classes. And, you know, so I was on the artist committee advisory board for a few years, and I knew that this was coming along. And now they've got the, you know, the totem pole trail and all of this activity, I think is going to be sort of this groundswell of new education. I'm hoping that we can educate the students in the right way and make very, very, it's about contributing to that legacy, providing the opportunity for people to learn. And so that's what I'm really excited about. And that's why I wanted to be, involved with the leadership of SHI.
Yeah. Well, you'll be speaking this upcoming Tuesday at noon Alaska time. The name of the lecture is Eagle's Journey with Raven. And just as a synopsis, again, it's sort of your journey with artwork.
Yeah.
And how you've developed into having the kind of career, but also developing the kind of art that you've been able to work with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
What's that?
It's a lot, but I'll probably be oversharing. But anyway, hopefully the people will find it interesting or inspiring.
Well, it's fascinating. Obviously, this is radio, so it can't be seen, but your work is absolutely stunning. Beautiful work and really one of a kind to see the forms that you're working with. It using the medium of glass is just so incredible. I was really taken aback by how beautiful your work was. So, and obviously you have a long and diverse and prolific career. It's been really fun just to have a short little primer on on your work. I apologize for not being more familiar with you earlier. I'm sorry. I feel like I should have been. Is your work available at the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute? Do you show any of it there, or is it?
Yeah, there's a small selection there. And then the bigger pieces, more significant pieces, are in galleries in Seattle and Santa Fe. So Seattle, it's the Traver Gallery, and then in Santa Fe, it's the Blue Rain Gallery. So those two galleries are the main galleries. I guess I should mention one up in Toronto, Sandra Ainsley Gallery too. So you can see more examples, or just do a online search. I'm sure a lot of the stuff pops up.
Well, just very quickly, your process, just without getting too detailed, tell me a little bit about the process of the making the work that you make.
Well, I work I work sculpturally with the glass, so I'm working
blown,
out of the.
It's not like blown glass, in other words, right? It's sort of solid pieces.
It is blown.
Oh, okay.
Is actually blown, but it's a very thick wall bubble that I work with, which allows me to kind of pull it off center and shape it in different directions. So I usually create layers of color within the glass, and then I'm actually carving through in the same way that you would make a silk screen. So I put a stencil on the surface of the glass. I draw directly onto it. I cut it out, exposing areas of the glass that are going to be carved through. So I carve through the top layer of color to expose the color underneath.
And you do that while the glass is still molten?
No. Okay. I should say that after the glass has been fully shaped and formed, and then when it's cooled to room temperature, I apply this rubber tape to the surface, cover it entirely, splice it together, and then I'll draw the design directly onto the form, cut it out, and then sandblast it.
Those are techniques that you've kind of adopted through different schools and brought them to that. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, sandblasting is very common technique used for, making gravestones and what have you. Architectural, designs on glass. And so I've just adapted that technique to my sculptural forms. And, I work in lots of different ways. I work in bronze. I work in, lost wax castings. I've done 8-foot high totem poles that weigh about, you know, 2,800 pounds, of, you know, so it's pretty varied, you know, the way that I can work. And, you know, if you think about bronze casting, you know, glass casting is very similar in its approach.
Wow. Well, it's been fascinating to talk to you. Thank you for giving us so much of your time today. And for those of you listening, hear more from Preston Singletary and his journey. In Eagle's Journey with Raven, that's a lecture that's going to be held by the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. It's on Tuesday, this upcoming Tuesday. It's going to be at noon. And then this is all going to be part of, this will be streamed also on the Institute's YouTube channel. So you can check out all of the lectures that's part of the SHI's Walter Soboleff lecture series that's happening this fall. And it's all happening in the Walter Soboleff building here in Juneau. And recordings of those talks, again, all of the Institute's talks will be on the YouTube channel immediately following each event. This one's happening this Tuesday, September 17th, Eagle's Journey with Raven. And we've been talking with Preston Singletary, who you'll be able to see on Tuesday. Preston, thanks again so much for your time. It was fascinating talking with you.
Thanks so much. We'll see you Tuesday.
Thank you. That's going to do it for Juneau Afternoon, broadcast live from KTOO 104.3 FM, online at ktoo.org, and rebroadcast on this station at 7 o'clock tonight. For more info on the show or to listen to past shows, you can go to ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. Boston Christopher is our producer. We had help today from Aaron Tripp, and our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Thanks for joining the conversation. Until next time, have a great weekend. And we're going to leave you with a little bit more of this great album from Buddy Tabor, a re-release of Writing on Stone. This is a track called New Fallen Snow.
Over this ground, dug the gold from your mountains, cut tall trees down, rode a million miles on that asphalt dream, heard the hum of the wheels, heard that freight train whistle scream. Now the sky has turned gray like the strands of